yourself these questions. What's going to happen without me here? What's going to happen after I'm gone? What are they going to do without me? These questions pop up for some of us near retirement, I suppose. Or maybe they don't, maybe you just have to get out. I think these questions do come up when people are near retirement or when people just be ending something and beginning something new. Well, it could be a job or something. These also pop up when we're near death. What are they going to do without me? Now, these questions can be self-centered, kind of rooted in my pride, my accomplishments, my awesomeness, but they also can be other-centered if they're worded properly. So this is a self-centered question. I've invested too much time and energy here. What if someone comes along after me and ruins it? That's a self-centered question. But this is an other-centered question. Without me here, will they be okay? Will they have everything they need? Will they stay united? I want them to be one. Will they remain as one? This is what Jesus is asking at the Last Supper, which is what this gospel passage is from. He's praying at the Last Supper. As complicated as a reading as it is to read or to listen to, this is what Jesus is praying for. He prays this knowing that his disciples will soon largely be scattered. They're going to lose their unity. You know, Jesus is going to be arrested, and they go all sorts of different directions. This is what Stephen is asking as he is martyred in the first reading today. And he's just copying Jesus in praying for his killers. Because he says, "Do not hold this sin against them, Lord." He's concerned for them. He doesn't want them separated from God. They're killing him, but he's still concerned for them. So he prays for them. And this is what many people pray for when they're near death. And especially parents, I'm sure. When parents are at the hour of death, it is often their heaviest care when there are divisions between the children. Family divisions can be extremely painful. Divisions can often come about because of, well, lots of things, but I think stubbornness is one of them. Sometimes because of an unwillingness to forgive. You know, an unforgiving person may be more focused on another person's action than on what is necessary for their soul. This is a trap that Stephen did not fall into. Instead, he would pray for his killers because it was clear to him that they needed it. They didn't know what they were doing, and they were acting rashly. And so Stephen knew that he needed to be praying for them. And he did it in imitation of what Jesus already has done, praying for his killers as he was being killed. And sometimes the stubbornness, though, is out of not a lack of forgiveness, but it's just out of a sense of pride, especially the pride associated with those first questions. What are they going to do without me? What happens after I'm gone? So to illustrate this, I'm gonna pick my favorite historical example for this sort of thing, and that's King Henry VIII. History lesson time. You probably all heard it already, though. But Henry, being part of a Christian nation in the Middle Ages, was a devout Christian, Catholic. But as a king, he was understandably concerned for what was going to happen without him after he was gone. This is the first job of a king. I mean, first of all, he wasn't even supposed to be king. His older brother died, so Henry ended up with a job at a young age. It's the job of every king to have a son who will become the next king. It keeps things stable. It keeps the kingdom united. What are they going to do without me? Your son will take over. Easy as that. With that, there is security for the future. But for Henry, he had a problem having a son. So he wanted out of the marriage that he was in, so he could try with somebody else, you know, as one does. But since it's the conviction of Jesus and of his church that it's better for people to keep promises than to break them, he couldn't really find a way out of the marriage. Divorce is out. The church also frowns upon murder. The only option was to find a way to annul it, proving that there was no marriage there to begin with, that it was all just not really a marriage. He does that once, and then he tries again, and the church gets fed up with him because he just wants to constantly be getting out of his promises that he's making. He's got to have a son for his country, but as a Christian, he has to fulfill the promises he made before God, especially, you know, marriage promises that he made in the church. He may not divorce, and he may not kill an innocent human being, So what is he to do? He breaks unity with the church out of stubbornness. A break that is continued until today. He says, I'm the head of the church then, in England, at least. And then he can divorce and kill as many of his six wives as he wants to. And there's no higher authority to set him straight from it. Stubbornness, pride. Instead of trusting that God was going to provide for him and for his people, for his family, for his country, after Henry finished his life on earth, he took matters into his own hand and showed that he just does not trust. I mean, thankfully, none of us have to deal personally with this level of political intrigue and with this level of family squabbles. But Jesus did, because Jesus knew that even Henry VIII was going to end up as part of his family. He was going to be part of his descendants in the faith. And that he, along with lots of other people, were going to be bad at maintaining unity. This is why Jesus prayed for this at the night of the Last Supper. Because we have the tendency to break unity in favor of our own stubbornness, our own pride, our own unwillingness to forgive. I want to read, just want to finish with this little passage from Cardinal Schönborn, who is the Cardinal Archbishop of Austria. He's got a great little book on homilies, but there's a nice little passage here that he writes about today's reading. He says this, "What is on my mind at this point is the idea that in this final hour, Jesus prayed for all those multitudes who would, at some point in the coming centuries, believe in him. He prayed for me, too, and for all those people to whom I am indebted for being able to believe. He also prayed for all those to whom I try to pass on his message. They were, all of them, already in his heart then. And what did he ask of God, his Father, in that decisive hour? In the first place comes his great request, that they may all be one. Like it or not, our time here is temporary. And the only one who can ultimately ensure that all good things will continue is not our children or our apprentices, as big as a part that they play, but God. When we have completed our part, which, admittedly, picks up where someone before us left off. When we've completed our part, we must entrust all of our concerns to God as Jesus did, leaving all of our cares in his capable hands."